This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan is the head of the Mountains and Rivers Order and abbot of the monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
So here we sit at the at the threshold of a new year, and this is a natural time to pause and both reflect, turn back and reflect on this past year, and then look forward. And so what can we say about this past year? It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom and the age of foolishness, the epoch of belief, the epoch of incredulity, the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It is the spring of our hope and the winter of our despair. And maybe this is always true, that in every time, in every moment, everything is present. All things are contained, all of eternity in a single instant, all possibilities. And so the nature of each moment is equal, but some moments are auspicious, made by time and space, made by particular possibility, made by the assembly, made by the need. And so the beginning of a new year is such a time. And as practitioners, to reflect is a part of being awake, I think, to know that we are on a path. And that doesn't just mean because we say so, but it means because we are actually on a path, which means we are discerning, we're questioning, we're recognizing what's before us. We're hearing the cries. We're recognizing the need. All the world is illness. All the world is medicine. All things are possible. Nothing has absolute value. People wield great power and bring benefit. People wield great power and bring great harm. And all of us will cease to be within a matter of years. But now, this is our time. This is our time. And we may, at this particular moment, wish to have been born into a different year, a different time, but this is our time. This past year has been a great challenge, in a way, an epoch of incredulousness. And yet here we are. And the teachings and the realities of karma tell us that everything is unfolding in accord with those laws. And so we are not here by accident. We are never here by accident. We are never here by one action alone or by one person alone. While we are all equal, we wield different kinds of power, different degrees of power, and we wield that power differently. And so how do we as practitioners enter a new year? For a practitioner, it's in a way a marvelous time to be alive. Right? It is very challenging. It is new. And although we can always say that that's true, we are facing things we have not faced before. we're looking back for what did our ancestors do before us can only help us so much. And so what do we rely upon? What do we take refuge in? Hanging from the branch and hearing a call from below, how do you respond? Standing from the top of the 100-foot pole, how do we step forward? Life and death are of supreme importance. Time swiftly passes by. If we think that those words are empty, then I think we're not paying attention. If we think that one person, you or me, cannot affect change, then we need to study more closely the law of cause and effect. When we become despairing or incredulous or lost in foolishness, it's likely that we are in contact with something. Something real. Something that needs attention. But we can also be sure that there's distance in our mind. And so we, in doing Fusatsu tonight, which is really based in an ancient practice, Fusatsu is based in a practice that began in the time of the Buddha, a time of gathering, a time of reflection, a time of atonement, a time of taking responsibility, and then moving forward, unburdened. And so to take refuge is, I think, an excellent way to enter into the new year within the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. And taking refuge is really the heart and mind of the Buddha, Dharma. It is Buddhism. It is returning to our original place. It's realizing the natural sacredness of things. It is both the great aspiration and it's the expression of wisdom manifesting in thoughts, words, and actions, in intentions, in following through on those intentions, in actions and taking responsibility for those actions. Master Dogen said, we take refuge in the Buddha because he is a great master. We take refuge in Dharma because it's good medicine. And we take refuge in the Sangha because it is an excellent friend. Being one with the Buddha, with all sentient beings, raise the Bodhi mind and let the Supreme Way be realized. Taking refuge is deeply personal. It is both universal because the three treasures belong to no one and include everything. And at the same time, it's deeply personal to free us of all clinging and possessiveness, to brighten our cloudy mind, to unburden our load. It's deeply personal, and yet it's also universal. When we take refuge, we are really exchanging breaths with every living creature. Dogen said, the act of taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha is achieved through mutual affinity and interaction. Whether you're in a deva realm, a human realm, hell realm, a demon realm, an animal realm, when you have mutual affinity and interaction with Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, you invariably take refuge in them. Taking refuge in the three treasures, you nurture yourself wherever you are. Birth after birth, world after world. You accumulate merit, assemble virtue, and attain unsurpassable complete enlightenment. Even if you're misled by unwholesome friends or obstructed by demons, in the end, you will regain your wholesome roots and increase your merit. The power of taking refuge in the three treasures does not decay. to take refuge in the three treasures, fill yourself with pure trust, put your hands together, bow, and recite, I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. This mutual affinity that Dogen speaks of is most important. It is that which is most personal and universal at the same time. It's like when we first encountered the Dharma. And many of you have spoken of a deep sense of knowing and of being known by the Dharma. That in encountering the Dharma, there's this sense of the Dharma knowing us already. Even though we don't understand. That affinity is a kind of warmth. It's like an invitation. It's a knowing. It's a meeting in a familiar place that we may have been, have never dreamt of or never dreamt of finding. And now Dogen says, with this mutual affinity, we need to interact. And then even if we're misled by unwholesome friends, demons, inside, outside, small or large, in the end, we will regain our wholesome roots. Such is the power of our basic nature, such is the power of our moral goodness. As Dr. Martin Luther King said, the moral arc of justice is long and it bends towards justice. The moral arc of the universe is long as it bends, and it bends towards justice. And Obama, when he was president, was being interviewed and he says, while we can't necessarily bend history to our will, we can all do something that, in the words of Dr. King, will bend it towards justice. And I think this is very much what Master Dogen is saying, that we individually and collectively will regain our wholesome roots. In the Lotus Sutra, the Buddha predicts that every being ultimately will attain enlightenment, that every being is moving along that moral arc. Because in our nature, we seek goodness, we seek happiness, and we want to avoid suffering and unhappiness. And although it's a long arc, and there's much confusion along the way, such that we lose hope and despair and can become convinced. As a college friend of mine used to say, 95% of everything is shit. Although we can indulge in such despair at times, I believe it is an indulgence, and it's an indulgence that we cannot indulge. Because it denies and ignores our basic person, our basic goodness. And it also abdicates our responsibility. And so to have faith in Buddha nature, we can do this. We can cultivate faith in Buddha nature. We can reflect on the life of the Buddha and all the whole many lineages, all of the innumerable men and women, practitioners, only a few of whom we know the names of, a very few. We can reflect on their lives, on the struggles that they had, the times they lived in, the faith they had, the practice they engaged, the benefit they brought to their world, and be inspired by their examples, by their teachings, by their lives, which is what allows us to be here tonight. I wanted to invoke, bring Dada Roshi into the room as such a person who gave so much of his life to us, to this Dharma, to this place, so that we could be here. He began thinking of that, of how to make it ensure that we would be here when he wasn't. And he began thinking of that long before we were could even allow ourselves to imagine that. We can raise Bodhi mind. We can do this. This is a practice. And bring forth that great and pure aspiration to see through all of our false projections and the false projections of others. To free ourselves from the tyranny of our attachments, which are always fearful, and liberate the self into its original emptiness. We can be of service to others. We can do this. How can I help? But don't spend too long asking the question. How can I help becomes a joyful effort, a patience fully engaged, a selfless giving which is made free and joyful in non-duality. When we free ourselves of the tyranny of success, the confinement of solving the problem, then we can joyfully and vibrantly give, act, respond. Take refuge in the Buddhas to nurture ourselves wherever we are, birth after birth, world after world. Being one with the Dharma, with all sentient beings, penetrate the sutras and let wisdom be like the ocean. We can take refuge in the Dharma, these great teachings, these teachings which that word does not even come close to describing the Dharma that has come down to us. That is, if I could say so, more true today than it was in the time of the Buddha. More contemporary today than it was in the time of the Buddha. Perhaps more needed today. Probably everybody thinks that in their time. Take refuge in the Dharma is to celebrate the virtues of these teachings and the practice, the practices that these teachings become, have become. Because without practice, teachings are just words, inspiring, insightful, but they don't change lives. When they become practice, embodied, manifested as practice, then they reverse the current of the river. Taking refuge is to align ourselves through study and practice, through realization, through our thoughts, words, and actions, to align ourselves with all that is good, all that is true, and to be resilient, to become more joyful in failure. When we begin to understand that failure is a construction, that failure is something we do with our mind that binds us, when we understand that there is only practice in a continuum, that there is only effort, there's only aspiration. In the simplest words of the Buddha, there's only doing our best. Then we're freed from failure. Taking refuge in the Dharma is to take refuge in our basic sanity. And goodness knows we could use some sanity. Our dignity, our respect, and the sanity, dignity, and respect of others. And it's to celebrate these simple and great qualities. We are fundamentally, biologically, spiritually, moral beings. The Buddha said this. Every study on happiness I've read says this in so many words. Finds where that moral goodness is in our brains. It's interesting. Are the precepts, the commandments in the Abrahamic religions, are they the source of our morality, or are they just expressing our basic nature? Being one with the Sangha, with all sentient beings, to lead the people and let harmony pervade everywhere. Being one with the Buddha, being one with the Dharma, being one with the Sangha, what is that? How do you be one with Buddha, be one with Dharma, be one with Sangha? All things are one essence. How do we not be one? How do we not be one with the Buddha? How do we not be one with the Dharma? Not be one with the Sangha? Lead the people and let harmony pervade everywhere. Buddhism speaks of this. And the importance of this, and in an era of, where leadership is so much a thing, being a leader, learning leadership and so on. What does that actually mean? Is that just appealing to our basic desire to be like the chief? Right, the head of the pack. In Buddhism, it means something very important. It means to first and foremost be an example without opening your mouth. To be an example to everyone, no matter who they are, no matter where they are. In other words, to be able to express basic truth so clearly in what we do, just through the sheer simplicity of our being, that it's experienced, it's perceived. Nobody has to know anything about Buddhism or morality or you. That's the power of example. And so when the Buddha, with this, we chant, being one with all ascension, with the Sangha, with all sentient beings, lead the people. It really means do your practice. It means take yourself seriously as a practitioner. Take yourself lightly as an ego. But to realize that to take yourself seriously as a practitioner means to regard yourself as a Buddha, to regard yourself as a vessel of the Dharma, to regard yourself as someone who has the capacity to provide an example. Through the simple acts of living well, of practicing. Shanti Deva said, bring this out again, I brought this out recently, with joy I celebrate the virtue that relieves all beings from the sorrows of the states of loss. With joy I celebrate those virtues. In other words, I'm concerned about that. I think about that. I am dedicated to that. I want to be an example of that, which means I have to practice those virtues that relieves all beings, and we start with ourselves, from the sorrows, and places those who languish in the realms of bliss, begin at home. And I rejoice in the virtue that creates the cause of gaining the enlightened state. I rejoice in those good qualities that create the conditions that are necessary for practice and realization, that are necessary for loving kindness and compassion. And then celebrate that freedom that is won by living beings from the round of pain. Because that is a cause of celebration. And that gladdens the heart. It makes the bodhisattva happy to see other people happy. You know, have you ever just studied a smile? When people smile, it's such an amazing thing. When you see someone and they're not looking at you, they don't know that you're looking at them, and they may look very somber or just still, or reflective, or sad. And then maybe they're talking to a friend, or they're reading something, or just thinking of something, and then they smile, and their whole being is transformed. What is that? The intention, ocean of great good, that seeks to place every being in this state of bliss, and every action for the benefit of all, every action that I can bring forth, that we can bring forth, this is my delight. This is what makes me happy. This is the work that I want to do in the world. And so in a way you can say it's kind of selfish, right, to bring so much happiness into the world, because it makes you happy. And through these actions now performed, and by all the virtue I have amassed, right, any good karma that I've created, may all the pain of every living being be wholly scattered and destroyed. In other words, all the good karma, all the merit that I've accumulated, all the virtues that I've strengthened within myself, they're not for me. I offer them, I dedicate them, I give them away, such that every living being would be free of every pain. Being one with the Sangha. We get lost together. We find a way together. We awaken together. We tend to the world together. That is the virtue of harmony. That is Sangha. It's a unified reality of one truth, one essence that appears in a multitude of forms. And so we practice together. We realize together. We struggle together. How much of the power of Sesshin is that? Is that in one moment, in one hall, we are simultaneously struggling and passing through. We are falling and rising, being born and dying together. Somebody was telling me recently a story, might have been one of you, I forget, of having been on the subway in the city, and there were two women who were quite small, older women, who were arguing about something. I don't know if it was who could get to sit down or something. And they were really arguing, like really going at each other, very angry. And the person telling me the story said that this guy, this huge guy, big guy, who they said looked kind of scary. You know, tattooed, studs, just lots of scary, came over and said, "Please, please stop arguing. You're breaking my heart. There's so much arguing. Please stop arguing." My hero. Lead the people. There's a moment. And so Shantideva says, "Today my life has given fruit, has borne fruit. This human state is well assumed. Today I take my birth, my place in Buddha's line, in the lineage of sanity and dignity, of those who are not afraid to say, 'It matters. I'll put my ass on the line. I will do my best. I will take responsibility. I will be held accountable.' And in this I have become the Buddha's child and heir. For I'm like a blind person who has found a most precious, precious gem within a seemingly mound of filth, As if by some strange chance, this enlightened mind has come to birth in me. How? How is this possible that we have found our way here tonight? How is it possible that we all found this Dharma? As if by some strange chance, as if, but not so much chance, the efforts of ourselves, the efforts of others, the enlightened mind has come to birth, has been born, aspiration rises. It is the universal vehicle that saves all wandering beings from the states of loss, that rising moon of the enlightened mind that soothes the sorrow born of the afflictions." What an incredible image. That rising mind of the enlightened mind, it's like the moon that's rising tonight. It's not even full, and it is exploding with brightness. It can't wait to be full. It isn't waiting to be full. It can't wait to share its luminosity equally in all directions. It doesn't care that it's not full. It doesn't know that it's not full. It's just shining. It's a mighty sun that utterly dispels the gloom and ignorance of wandering beings. The creamy butter, rich and full, all churned from the milk of true teaching. And so as after we complete our fasatsu, we'll sit for a little bit until midnight. And then we'll do Daikaijo, which is both ending the precautions of silence that we've been in all week during Sesshin, and also we could think of Daikaijo tonight as ushering in the new year and saying farewell to the old. And then we'll chant. We'll do a service, a New Year's service, to welcome the new year, and we'll chant the Metta Sutta. Usually we've done the Heart Sutra. And I was just thinking that it would be nice to usher in the new year within that beautiful, very simple and incisive teaching on loving kindness and compassion. And let that be the basis for our vow that we'll each make. Come up and take a pinch of incense and offer a vow. And to really appreciate the power of vow. And on an evening such as this, and together, that when you have reflected and you are clear about what is important for you to really be committing yourself to this year as a practice, as something to keep close in your heart to offer, then that becomes very powerful. It's a guiding principle. That's the nature of taking refuge. That's the stuff of practice. And so, what could be better than to do that together? And then we'll go downstairs and have a little breakfast and have a few moments together before you, those of us who are staying tonight, go off to bed. So I was thinking of the end of that Tale of Two Cities. It's a far, far better thing that I do now than I've ever done before. Is it a far, far better rest that I go to than I've ever known? Now, here the character had lived a not very good life and had an awakening, had come back into his humanity and was giving his life for somebody else. And in that act of giving, his life was transformed. That turning of the Dharma wheel was moving in both directions. And so too for us, taking refuge in the three treasures. Such bounty.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.